Good afternoon. Welcome to the VisionVest Live conference call series. Your host for today is Mr. Arnold Michel. Please go ahead, Mr. Michel.
Thank you, operator, and also thank you to all of our listeners as well. Today is Wednesday, May the 11th, 2016. It's a gorgeous sunny day here in White Rock, and good afternoon to all of our listeners. Welcome to our VisionVest Live Dial and Discover conference call series, your backstage pass into the minds of the money managers. My name is Arnold Machel. I'll be your host today. In today's call, we'll be reviewing the past quarter, what's gone on economically and in the markets, and also we'll hear some thoughts from one of the management firms within the Harmony platform. Please note that this call is being recorded, and there'll be a playback available on our website if you need to rehear part of it or you want to forward it on to a friend. So looking back just at the last quarter, the Canadian equity markets were resoundingly positive. Measured by the S&P TSX index, they went up 4.54% in the first quarter of 2016. Our GDP, we have to go back one extra quarter, so the fourth quarter of 2015, our GDP, or gross domestic product, grew by 0.8%. And 10-year treasuries decreased yet again, starting the quarter at 1.39 and ending down at 1.23. So marginal decrease, but still, interest rates continue to actually decline in spite of the fact that we think they can't get any lower. On the flip side, U.S. equity markets were negative. Now, that's in Canadian dollar-denominated terms. I'll talk about that a little bit down the road. The S&P 500 index returned a negative 5.63% in Canadian dollar terms. However, U.S. real GDP increased by 1.4% in the final quarter of last year, and they added 215,000 non-farm jobs in the month of March, which was a decrease from the 245,000 of the previous month. Overseas, also negative performance for the quarter, again in Canadian dollar terms, with the MSCI EFI index losing 9.68%. Now, I talked about, you know, that was in Canadian dollar terms. In reality, the U.S. market, again measured by the S&P 500, actually rose by 1.35%. But where the Canadian dollar has helped us for quite some time, with it declining more and more, it's actually helped our investment returns in non-Canadian investments. In the last quarter, that reversed itself, and we saw the Canadian dollar appreciate around 7%, and that's caused losses in a lot of our non-Canadian investments. And again, it brought a 1.35% return on the S&P 500 down to a loss of 5.63%. So the increase in the Canadian dollar, while it's great for us as travelers, it's not so great for us as investors in international markets, U.S. And abroad. Now, looking at interest rates, again, by and large, we saw them decline. One notable exception, they did increase a little bit in Greece from 8.3 to 8.6, but sovereign debt rates throughout most of the world declined. Japan dropped from 0.3 to actually flat, a zero. Germany 0.6 down to 0.2. So we've seen continued decreases in interest rates, and in fact, in some areas around the globe, even negative interest rates, which should bode well long term for equity markets, but in the short term is causing a little bit of pain. So what did that mean to your portfolio specifically? We'll just take a quick look at the Harmony Growth Portfolio versus the Harmony Balance Portfolio. If you were an investor in the Harmony Growth Portfolio, the embedded series for the first quarter of the year, you saw a decline of 2%, so not massive, but it definitely a decline. On the other hand, if you were a bit more conservative investor and were invested in the Harmony Balance Portfolio, the embedded series, the decline was only 1.3%. So that's what's happened. What do we see going forward? Well, first of all, we expect that equity volatility is going to remain elevated. We've had 3 or 4 years of almost straight positive returns, and towards the end of last year, volatility came back, and it's continued this past quarter. We believe it's going to continue. More volatility than we've seen, at least in the past few years. Long run, that's not a bad thing. We need volatility in the markets, but in the short run, there may be times when we're feeling nervous and concerned. In Canada, we believe that the tepid pace of global economic growth will be a drag, but that could be counterbalanced by rising commodity prices. In the Eurozone, they have substantial pent-up fuel for a sustained economic recovery, and coupled with low energy prices, we believe that, there's some good opportunities in the Eurozone, and that, in fact, opportunities around the globe have somewhat equalized, with each geographic area presenting opportunities equally. Interest rates, we believe, will remain low. They have been low relative to historic norms, and we believe that that's going to continue. At some point, they need to go up, but that's still going to be probably a long ways off. So our guest today is Bob McGee. Bob is the Senior VP and Portfolio Manager of Equities C.S. McGee LP, and he's an experienced equity manager and was the Vice President and Chief Investment Officer of First Commonwealth Trust prior to joining C.S. McGee in 2000. In that previous position, he managed discretionary assets for institutions and high net worth individuals, and equities under his management outperformed the S&P 500 stock indexes from 1996 through 1999 and into 2000. He's a chartered financial analyst and holds an MBA from Carnegie Mellon University, and also holds a bachelor's degree in finance from Indiana University State or in University of Pennsylvania. Thanks, Bob, for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
So looking forward to hearing your comments, particularly, I know you manage a portion of the Harmony U.S. equity pool. Is that right?
That is correct.
And what's your particular specialty in that?
We manage U.S. Domestically oriented. Just most of the stocks are, you know, incorporated here in the United States. And we have a large cap value bias to the in the portfolio where, you know, we're looking for stocks that we think are trading at, you know, a discount for, and based on fundamentals to the general market.
So large cap value bias. That sounds a little bit like Warren Buffett.
A little bit. I guess that's that can be said that way. We obviously do things a little bit differently, but you know, we are, you know, our process uses some, you know, a quantitative process and as well as a team here of fundamental analysis to, you know, come across and build a probably a more diversified portfolio than what Warren Buffett would have.
Okay, good. And can you tell us how you guys, just a little bit about the investment strategy employed by you and the guys at C.S. McGee, differentiate a little bit between, for example, what Warren does or what other managers do. What do you guys do differently?
I think the starting point is we do we look for stocks that, you know, first of all, are quantitatively attractive, and you know, we use several different factors, but we use a common sense approach where we're using, you know, a stuff where we're looking for stocks that have, you know, a lower P/E ratio and a higher growth rate than the market. We also, instead of using a some of the ROE factors that some of the others use, we use something called enterprise value to EBITDA, which easily can be translated into, you know, what the whole company is selling for today versus its operating income. So it's a different way for us to take and look at economic reality and adjust to kind of change in from, you know, accounting versus the actual economics. You know, and then we follow that through, and I think that that's an important process, is we just don't listen to a computer that tells us what's going on. We take the next step to, you know, dig deeper and find out what the catalyst for a change might be for the stock and, you know, what's going to lead the stock higher. Spend a lot of time on risk assessment, although that's not necessarily been a key factor to these, you know, the bull market run we've had since 2009, but, you know, we look to add value by buying stocks we think are trading at good values, but at the same time, you know, are overall have a lower risk profile as well.
Okay. Well, I'm going to ask you to, in a little bit, tell me some of your favorite stock picks out of that grouping. But before we get to that, I'd like to just get your opinion on a couple of bigger picture issues. So we've seen interest rates just continuing to decline, as I referenced in my earlier comments. You know, we keep thinking they can't get any lower, and yet they do continue to get lower. In fact, I think it's Switzerland. There's a few other places now have negative interest rates. I don't know if you want to talk about that globally or just in the U.S., but can you just share some of your opinions about what those continued declines are going to do, big picture-wise and specifically with your portfolio that you're managing?
Yeah, and I think that the, you know, one of the things, I guess the easiest is the answer first is the end part for the effect of the portfolio. You know, it's been a little bit of a headwind for us because we really expect rates to rise. You know, we saw a little bit of that happening last year, and, you know, this quarter was a, you know, although in the U.S. terms, you know, 10-year treasuries went from, you know, approximately a 2.3 to, you know, 1.7 at the end of the quarter. So it was a pretty big fall in yields for the quarter. And you know, what we're looking at in some of the scenario there is it is a global play. And, you know, it's a, on one factor, you look out and say, well, you know, why are we, you know, why are we in the situation we are? And, you know, it's a case where here in the U.S., we're having a little bit of growth, but not a substantially, you know, high growth rate. Some of that can be, you know, accounted back to demographics. Some of it can be, you know, attributed to, you know, what's happening in Europe. Although, you know, we you know, as you assessed, we do think that there's some pretty good opportunity for Europe to turn around. And then you throw in that, you know, the China is a market that's been very volatile in the first quarter, and, you know, it's a country that's moving from a pure export-driven type of environment with very low wages to one that's, you know, has a consumer discretionary economy. And you know, that's a, you know, nice for their citizens that they are moving up from the, you know, from substance to, you know, having a little bit of extra money in their pockets. But, you know, that's never a straight line. And so what you have is, from a global standpoint, coming out of a recession, you would expect things to grow a lot faster than they have. You know, we've seen where deflationary environment has kicked in, especially with the decline in oil prices. But the, you know, you look at global growth, and we're still 1.5-2%. We're still looking at, you know, inflation, you know, inflation, especially ex energy, although we're starting to lap some of that, where the decline is more than a year old. You know, you look at inflationary pressures, and, you know, that's the negative of these really low interest rates, is that, you know, inflation can start to pick up. We haven't seen it. We're surprised we haven't seen it. We think that's what will lead to higher rates. But, you know, as it is, there's still so much fear out there that we're on, like, kind of an edge of, you know, it wouldn't take much for us to go into another recession or a deflationary environment. And that's not, I think that's, you know, that's the risk atmosphere that people are taking. But, you know, our portfolio, we're set up that, you know, we still believe that you know, rates are going to rise because we're, you know, we're still moderately bullish that, you know, we're going to have growth. You know, GDP growth is obviously a good thing, but that's, you know, I think the biggest problem is that's what everybody's trying to fight for today, and it's hard to pull off when everybody in the globe and every country in the globe wants to do the same thing, so they're headed for the same door, and it makes it hard for everybody.
So you do see inflation ticking up sometime as interest rates tick up. What do you think that's going to do specifically to your portfolio? You know, you guys are relatively higher to the high dividend paying stocks. What's that going to do to your portfolio and to maybe broader U.S. equity portfolios as well?
I think that, you know, inflation ticking up, I think that that's, you know, if you look at in an inflationary environment, the fixed income investors are the ones that are going to hurt the most. You know, from a equity standpoint, that will help you cushion from, you know, from a an inflationary environment because, you know, as commodity prices go up, you know, your resource cost goes up a little bit and your cost of goods goes up. But generally speaking, you can pass that on to consumers to raise prices. And, you know, so therefore, at the end of the day, the, you know, all else being equal, you know, companies are making more money. So that's a, you know, and that's what we're looking for in our, on our individual portfolio. You know, we're positioned where, you know, the, have the overweight in industrials. I think that that's a, higher input costs will lead to higher, you know, higher productivity. Industrials is the is a good place to be. The other
place.
So
when
place
you say industrials, can you share what a few clients listening?
Sure.
I mean, I know what that means. What are a few names that would be considered industrials?
A few names are, you know, we own a couple of diversified conglomerates in Honeywell and General Electric. Both have global exposure. To, you know, a lot of different business lines, from, you know, aerospace, to electronics, to, you know, General Electric makes the, locomotives. So it's those are two pretty well diversified companies. We have one company that's, you know, been a little bit of underperformer over the last 3 years, but recently has come back a little bit called Dover. Another company that they have some exposure to the energy market, which has hurt them. But I think that, you know, if you start seeing inflation and energy prices rebounding, I think that Dover will be positioned well. But the other part that's doing extremely well is a company called that one of their companies they own is Otis Elevators. So the business spending has done very well over the last several months as well. So it's a you know, from what we're still seeing is in that growth environment where, you know, the people are still building new buildings. You know, apartment buildings are still going up. So any place that you would need an elevator, that is doing very well. And so that's, you know, that's one of their businesses that's doing well.
Can we just circle back there? You mentioned, I think it was Dover, an energy producer involved with energy. But we've seen a lot of volatility there in energy prices in the last year, I guess. What do you see happening there, and how is that? What's that going to do to your portfolio?
Yeah, you know, energy is one that, you know, we've been we were surprised at how far energy fell. You know, it's a case where you saw a little bit of slowdown in demand, but we've seen a big increase since then. And I'm talking about, you know, like you saw a little bit of decrease, you know, 12 months ago. And since then, you know, especially here in the U.S., demand is actually going up, which is a good thing. The difficulty is that you have excess supply. You've had, you know, essentially OPEC has used to control the prices a little bit more, be able to change, have set quotas for their individual countries. But now you've got a few more countries producing outside of OPEC that they don't control the same market share. Here in the United States and somewhat Canada has, you know, a lot of reserves have come online. There's been a lot of drilling. We look at what we're looking at is from here that we saw, we've seen a nice recovery. We're still underweight there. You may see us in the next couple months reduce the underweight a little bit. A couple of the names have gotten beat up a little bit more than what we think they should have. We think that there's some pretty good plays in the natural gas area where they're building some terminals to liquefy the natural gas and compete in on pricing more globally. And so those are some of the aspects that we're doing, but, about 18 months ago, we had essentially everything that was in E&P, that's exploration and production, and we did own a purchase a refiner in Marathon Petroleum just to, because we do continue to think that the demand side of it on the oil continues to go up. Miles driven here in the U.S. continues to go up. There are some fuel efficiency standards that continue to go up, but the overall, there's still a lot more miles driven, which is a very healthy, I think, for the long-term price. I don't think we're going, well over 100 again and anytime soon in the price of crude. But, I think that there's a good chance that, we get up to the, 55, 65. And I think that's a good enough number that energy companies will make money, and I think that there'll be some drilling at that at those prices as well.
So 55 to 65, that's your call. I'll hold you to it. You heard it here first, folks. So, Bob, tell me your two or three favorite companies that you guys own right now that are just awesome stories.
There's a lot, and I think that one of the sectors here in the U.S. that has really started to look very interesting is the healthcare side. Healthcare has been a sector that has been unloved for the last, probably since last July of last year. It's been an area where, for your listeners that aren't quite familiar with the U.S. market, it's we've been in a state of flux of the insurance side, and I think that's created some opportunity. It's a case where we've got several different programs involved, and I think that the healthiest area that we're looking at from, trying to get more people covered for insurance is Medicaid, which is somewhere in between the government Obamacare type of regulation that not everybody qualifies for. And then there's the Medicare for those retired over 62. But for there's a program called Medicaid, which is for more children-oriented, and that's expanding in a lot of states. So there's a company called Centene in the healthcare side that we really like. I think that will be, from an insurance standpoint, will do very well.
Centene. Okay.
The other one, probably one of my favorites is actually a stock that got beaten up because we had a mild winter. And that's Dick's Sporting Goods. That was a stock we bought a little over a year ago. And, it was a company that got, price was down because the rounds of golf were down. Dick's Sporting Goods is a, U.S. retailer of essentially just straight line sporting goods. They sell everything from, fishing equipment to golf clubs to, athletic apparel to baseball gloves. And, their biggest sales are on their apparel size and the Under Armour and Nike. It's the risk of the company, obviously, is that you know, there's some direct-to-consumer markets at Nike and Under Armour. There's also, you know, the every retailer is feeling a little pressure from Amazon. But sporting goods is an area, a specialty area, where you're able to make up some space on the equipment. You know, when a lot of people, when their kids are doing sporting events or starting new sports, they wait till the last minute. So I think that's very helpful. And they want to touch things and feel things before they buy them from the equipment standpoint. So that's still a good sign. And, you know, the other thing that they're doing is that I had mentioned that the golf business was declining. So the stock got beat up because 15% of their sales were on the golf side. That's now down to about, 10, 11%. But what they made up for is they eliminated the space in the stores and put in women's and children's athletic apparel. And that is the Nike and the Under Armour, which is doing extremely well. And we like the stock. We think that their retail sales will continue to go up. One of their competitors recently filed for bankruptcy. It was not a strong market. It's not a whole lot of overlap where they're at, so it's kind of an area where they can expand. So that's we think that'll be a very good positive. But the stock got beat up in the fourth quarter, was one of our best performers in the first quarter. We continue to see that, and the reason for that was they had a overstock of winter coats. Anytime you see a stock getting beat up more than it should because of, you know, kind of a weather phenomenon, we feel it's really time to buy the stock and you know, look very good. Long term, it will look like a good buy.
Okay. Well, Bob, just a minute or two to go here, and let me just ask you one final question. I mean, if you had one thing to say to investors as to why they should be buying U.S. or your mandate, U.S. value, what would that be?
I think that when you look at overall how markets are set up, I think that there's it's been a case where you've seen growth outperform value dramatically over the last several years. I think that's going to change. I think that valuations will start to become important. With that being said, I think that the U.S. market is still going to be one of the leaders in economic growth. It might be 2%, but, China is going to be the top, and then you get into the U.S., and, everybody else is going to be slightly behind that. So I think that's, we're not expecting huge double-digit returns anywhere, but we expect that, U.S. equity markets, and for that matter, a lot of, equity markets globally will be, really will be the best performing markets, 3 to 5 years from now for sure.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Bob, for taking the time out of your busy schedule to chat with me and our listeners today.
Oh, no problem. Thank you for your time.
To our listeners, we hope you've enjoyed our call today. If there's something you'd like to discuss with me personally, give my office a shout at 604-542-2818. If there's something you missed in the call and want to hear it again, or if you know someone who couldn't listen in live but may want to hear the call, a playback will be available shortly on our website at visionvest.ca. And if you received the invitation to this call by email, playback details will be sent to you shortly, or you can call our office for a playback phone number and passcode. Our next call is scheduled for Wednesday, August the 10th, 2016. Invitations and details will be sent out to you closer to the date as long as we have your email address on file or are aware of your interest. This has been a VisionVest Style and Discover conference call brought to you by Arnold Machel, VisionVest Financial Planning and Services, and IPC Investment Corporation. As usual, any returns quoted assume funds are held for the entire period with all dividends reinvested. Commissions, trailing commissions, management fees, and expenses all may be associated with mutual fund investments. Please read prospectus before investing. Mutual funds are not guaranteed. Their values change frequently and past performance may not be repeated. Thanks again for listening.